The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society. The Korea Society, in 2007, celebrating 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. On April 11, 2005, the Korea Society hosted a lecture titled Contemporary Russian Policy Towards the Korean Peninsula by Alexander Vorontsov, head of the section for Korean Studies at the Russian Academy of Sciences. Vorontsov recounted the history of Russian relations with North Korea, from close alliance at the time of the DPRK's founding, to the distant relationship that followed the collapse of the Soviet Union, to the present, as President Putin is striving to re-establish and strengthen Russia-DPRK ties.
It's with particular pleasure that I introduce this program today because, one, I'm a great admirer of our speaker, whom I have seen in action in Washington, Pyongyang, and Seoul. And secondly, I think we hear far too little about the Russian perspective on the six-party process. We hear one way or another a good deal from everybody else, but not so much from the Russians. My impression in my trips to Pyongyang is that the single closest foreign relationship that Kim Jong-il has is with President Putin. They have met frequently, they have gotten along well, and I think it's a very important relationship. And Alexander Vorontsov has just finished up 12 weeks at the DOD-sponsored, I never can think of the name of it, Asian Pacific's. Okay, Asia-Pacific Center for Security Studies, and is now heading back home to Moscow after that. But he was part of a fellow of a, you were how, 90 people in your group? Yeah, a very good program. Alexander has served in Pyongyang. He speaks Korean, is very well versed, does excellent writing in some of the most prestigious Russian publications. And I think we're really very fortunate to have sort of grabbed him on his way back to Moscow after his time in Hawaii. So without further ado, may I introduce Alexander Vorontsov, please.
Good afternoon, dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, for me, it's a great honor and, of course, a great pleasure to have opportunity to make presentation in such famous organization like the U.S. Korea Society. And taking this opportunity, I would like to express my sincere gratitude to Ambassador Donald Gregg for kind invitation me to this society. And, of course, Russia-North Korean relation, I mean new Russia, yes, after the dissolution and disintegration of the Soviet Union, I suppose should be divided into two very, very opposite periods of development. The first period is the most approximately the first half of 19th, it was a period of the drastic deterioration of bilateral relationship, and it was deeply connected with a super ideological approach of the new Russian leadership to North Korea. And that, you know, of course, it was a period of the formulation of the new foreign policy and the new state at all, and some misconduct and misperceptions, it's quite natural. But unfortunately, it's deteriorated our bilateral relationship strongly. the new foreign policy of Russia in that period of time, especially in the period when the Mr. Kozarev was the head of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia, was remarked by the absolutely one-sided approach and absolutely one-sided orientation toward South Korea and full neglecting of North Korea. And first of all, in result of the ideological approach. And that time it seems to me that Russia democracy tried to be more Catholic than Pope. And for example, Mr. Kozarev told in 1993 that Russia is ready to sell armament and weapon to everybody in the world except North Korea. And in 1992, the first Russian, new Russia, foreign policy doctrine was formulated and published. And dealing with Korean Peninsula, it was remarked that the target of Russia toward North Korea is strategically remoting from North Korea. And Mr. Yeltsin by himself also a few times told directly, attacked directly Kim Jong-il and told that we have it's no idea to contact with such unpleasant regime like North Korea and so on and so on and so on. And it seems to me it's big some ground for make some comparison with present Republican administration relation towards North Korea, because it's there are some ground for comparison. But results were very, very negative for Russia. And of course, that period of time, some naive approach also took place in the Russian foreign affairs, and Russian diplomats trust maybe too much to South Korean counterparts. I remember, for example, that some high-ranked Russian diplomat who was very responsible in that period of time, influential, he told that he was convinced by the South Korean high-ranked official many times that if Russia will stop and cut fully any cooperation with North Korea, it will be signed, it will be regarded by Seoul as a sign of pure Russian goodwill towards Seoul, is a pure Russians reorientation from totalitarian regime in North Korea to democratic power in South Korea. And in this case, Seoul, of course, promised huge investments to Russia. And the government insurance of the business investment to Russia and so on and so on. And when Russia did it and stopped totally our cooperation with North Korea, this Russian diplomat was still at some several years ago this conversation took place, but he was surprised during all this year. I cannot understand how very same people from South Korean side told me, okay, you did it, it's very good, but now Russia lost fully influence over North Korea, and that's why Russia is not interested for us. You lost your presence in Korean Peninsula, in north part of Korean Peninsula, and that's why we cannot understand why you are claiming for some kind of role, why you are waiting for invitation for the Korean problem discussions, and so on and so on and so on. And as you remember, in 1996, the four-party talk began without Russia participation, and so on and so on. And the first half of 19th, of course, the cooperation between our two countries, I mean Russia and North Korea, was absolutely destroyed. For example, in 89, it's record or some kind of the highest point of the bilateral trade between Soviet Union and North Korea, our turnover of bilateral trade was about $1 billion U.S. dollar. And Russia, excuse me, Soviet Union, traditionally took about from 50 to 30% of North Korean trade in absolute figures. But in the mid of 19, The Russia-North Korean trade reduced till $80 million of dollar. And in the period of the Soviet Union, 93 large enterprises were constructed with Soviet assistance. It was leading enterprises in the heavy industry area, first of all. And many of these enterprises were constructed as a joint venture with idea the receiving the big part of this production in the Soviet Far East region and Siberia region, because the market of North Korea is reduced, of course. And all was destroyed, cut, and these enterprises stopped. And North Korea, for the first time, met the problem of unemployment in the country, because these enterprises stopped their activity. And the result was not very good, of course. And in the mid-19, it began the process of reconsideration of the Russia policy, because the so highly ideological approach contradicts openly to the another very correct task which was announced, the construction of a belt of neighborhood along the Russian borders. And Russia, as you know, has... Thank you. Russia... thank you for your kind patience. And Russia, as you know, has a joint border with North Korea, only 17 kilometers, but it's a joint border. And, of course, from the point of view of common sense, neighbor cannot be chosen. Yes, everybody should try to live peacefully with neighbor and try to develop a constructive relation with neighbor, indispensable of the domestic peculiarity of this country, every country. And by the way, you remember that I think in the period of Yeltsin, by the way, in the second half of, in the second term of his presidency, being in power, Russia began to support Shah Massoud in Afghanistan. Shah Massoud, who fights so successfully against Soviet troops, he became our alliance, because it was only one power in Afghanistan who opposed Taliban in that period of time. And Russia understood that in spite of he was relatively weak, but he could constrain Taliban offensive to the former Soviet Central Asia Republic. And peace on the border, it's a very important value, yes, and I think it was very wise from the Russian side to reorient orient their policy and to make the military support to Shah Massoud army, and he was not destroyed by Taliban before the well-known event have come. And his army became the basic power in the ground forces in the coalition, anti-Taliban coalition, then later. It's one of the examples that the security on the border, it's very important thing, and it's we should cooperate with people who can help you to provide security on the border. And North Korea, of course, it's our neighbor with a joint border and with a long history of relation, the cooperation. And in the second half of 19, it began the process of reconsideration and attempt to improve relation. But, of course, the principal changes took place when Mr. Putin came in office. And, by the way, in that period of time, Kim Jong-il told by his close aide that at last in Russia, in Kremlin, came people with whom it's possible to have a deal, he told to his assistants. And... But ground was prepared. Ground for improvement of relations was prepared before, and with when Mr. Putin took the office, the situation became developed very, very rapidly. And as you remember, in February of 2000, it was a treaty of cooperation and peace was signed between our two countries. And then in July of the same year, Mr. Putin made his unexpected visit to Pyongyang, and he received excellent treatment and reception in Pyongyang. And of course, Kim Jong-il apprised and assessed it very highly, the courage of maybe Mr. Putin, who was the first from the big powers, major powers, leaders who visited Pyongyang. And by the way, it was the first leader of Russia and Soviet Union, first people who visited North Korea, nor Soviet leader, I mean the first people, General Secretary of the Communist Party, never visited North Korea, DPRK. And of course, before it, in the period of Russian Empire, also, of course, never high-ranked Russian official visited North Korea.
When was that? When did Putin go to Pyongyang?
It was July of 2000 year. The next month was of the Inter-Korean summit. The next month after the Inter-Korean summit. And they succeed to establish good contact, personal contact, and according to North Korean tradition, quite, which have a lot of peculiarities and specifics, they used to call it now as a relationship of personal friendship between the leaders of our two countries. And they try to use these notions in any way, and some kind to enjoy some benefits and exceptions from the general rules. For example, I remember in 2000-2001 I served as the second secretary of Russia embassy in DPRK, and I was responsible for one of the tasks of my task was covering the development of bilateral relationship. And I remember it was period of the improvement of the bilateral relationship. And Russia, for example, Russia Minister of Education gave 10 state stipends to North Korean students for the Russian government, with Russia government financial support. But during the visit of Mr. Secretary of Education, who at that time was the head of the Interstate Commission, Russian-North Korean Commission for the Development of Economic, Psychological, Technological Relationship, he made oral promises to expand the quantity from 10 to 30. But it was oral, not written responsibility. But they succeeded to implement this oral promise into the practice, and it's the quota was expanded. But the most interesting thing, in the official letter of education ministry in Russia was mentioned that this stipend not covers some speciality dealing with preparation of artists, because it's very expensive, it's very absolutely only on the payable basis, and there is a big long line of people from many countries, from West Europe and in other countries, who are ready to pay, but they need to wait their time during a few years, because it's quantity of the conductors. For example, the North Korean asked to accept five students in Russia, Moscow, named after Tchaikovsky Conservatory, to prepare conductors, five people, or after the visit to the Russia and Moscow, St. Petersburg especially, Kim Jong-il, you remember, he visited for the first time Russia in 2001. It was a prolonged visit during 24 days by train. He was impressed strongly by the ballet in St. Petersburg, Mariinsk Theater, and he asked to accept a group of North Korean students to the ballet school in St. Petersburg. But it was impossible, because people were in line, students who wanted to study in this ballet school, and they were ready to pay money, but no rooms for them. And we explained to North Korean side the situation many times. But they repeated, yes, we understand, but we should try to resolve all questions in the spirit of the special relationship and the personal friendship between the leaders of our two countries. it was difficult to understand, to explain to Russia Counter Site and Ministry of Foreign Affairs and to Ministry of Educational. But the most funny is that it worked. And finally, Russian side gave them not five, but two positions in Moscow Conservatory for conductors, and they accepted a few people in Vagan, the ballet school, very famous ballet school in St. Petersburg. It's one of the examples.
How are they doing?
Good. They are good people, of course. They are good students, of course. And the quantity of, for example, and the relation between develop very rapidly in all fields except economic. No, there are some reasons. Yes, first of all, the capability of both Russia and, of course, first of all, Moscow, financial capability is very reduced and restricted. And the problem of the debt, yes, to the Soviet Union is not the result till now. Very difficult negotiations continued. It's also interesting. They approach, Moscarin approach. We try to explain, Russia side explain, the situation changed. There is no Soviet Union. There is no socialist country. There is no practice of socialist countries. And now we, Russia, is market economy country. And we're member of the Paris Club, London Club, and another international market organization. And we need to follow their rules and terms. And one of these rules is no credit to country who did not pay the debt. And if Russia want to give you credit, we cannot because we are bounded by these regulations. They answered, yes, we understand. You are a member of this organization. But we, DPRK, we are not member of that organization. Why we should be bounded by these regulations? And another example about the debt. They try to explain, yes, you gave, the Soviet Union gave money to the credit and so on and so on. It's about $8 billion American dollar, by the way. But it was not for granted. It was given not for granted. We provide your security, and you should pay for it. You should remember it. It was not given for granted. It's some kind of unusual logic. But many problems were settled in this field also, but not to the very end. But, and for example, I told that we constructed many basic enterprises in North Korea, vital for Korean economy. And, of course, they have very, very keen problem with electricity deficit. And there are two electricity plants in Pyongyang, Pyongyang electricity plant and East Pyongyang electricity plant. And, of course, constructed with the Soviet economic assistance. It's Soviet equipment. And the Korean specialists who know Soviet equipment and Soviet Russian language and so on and so on. And they try to reconstruct them. And they asked us to help them. And Russian specialists came, they made research feasibility studies and appraised it. It's need $200 million to reconstruct these two power plants, which gave about 500 millions of kilowatt electricity. They told, okay, give us credit once again. We told it not so that period of time, we cannot give credit, we should pay money in deficit. But they made the list of some equipment, the basic enterprises, including Chongjin metallurgy enterprises and Sonbon oil refinery plant and so on, and asked us to help him to reconstruct it. Everything is possible, but the problem of financial support should be resolved. It's economic field. Yes, we increased our bilateral trade a little bit. Now it's about 130 million, of course, very small, incomparable with inter-Korean trade and China-North Korean trade. It's incomparable. But if try to speak about another field, the political contact, culture exchanges, the improvement unbelievable, very drastic. In political field, all Russia elite, all Russia leadership visited North Korea during the latest years, and back versa, vice versa from North Korean side. Everybody were. Putin was the head of the both chamber of Russia Parliament, State Duma, and Council of Federation. All basic ministers, leader ministers visited. Mayors of Moscow, Lushkov visited twice Pyongyang, and Ryan Mangil, mayor of Pyongyang, visited Moscow twice also, and governor of St. Petersburg. I don't speak about the maritime province and Khabarovsk province. It's a special story. Its cooperation very, very active. About 70% of Russia economic cooperation is backed by the local provinces, first of all, maritime, Khabarovsk, Buryatia, Kamchatka, Magadan, Sakhalin, and so on and so on. In the cultural field, I remember when I was in embassy, they were very anxious how to send students when the question about the resumption of the student exchange discussed, how to send students to the capitalist country, Russia, and how they will live with a very small stipend, and so on and so on. But now there are about 500 of North Korean students are in Russian universities. And the question was the resolve because the transport tariff became very expensive in Russia. It was made the decision to use, first of all, the maritime province, Khabarovsk area, Siberia region, which more close, place more close to North Korea. And majority of North Korean students are studied now in our east part, Russia, east part region institute and university. Many students, and not only in the state sector, but in private sector, I was surprised very much. Some about 50 students from North Korea are studied now on the payable basis in private university in Russia. How they may own money, I don't know. And one of the priorities is railroads engineers, preparation of railroads engineers in Omsk, Novosibirsk's institute. There are dozens of North Korean students who studied in this specialty. It's testifying, of course, that the railroads development is regarded as a high priority in North Korea. And one of the reasons, I think, is that of course, the railroad situation is difficult. All economic situation is very difficult in North Korea, and the railroad also, for example, in the most difficult period of time, in the second half of 19th, you know, it's Adorius March, period of Adorius March in North Korea, as I called them, or Hard March. Situation, of course, very difficult indeed. We have Russia, yes, have our general consulate mission in Chongjin. It's North Hamgyon area, close to the Russia embassy. Excuse me, to the Russia border. It's about 80 kilometers from Pyongyang. And, of course, every month the people from our mission need to come to Russia embassy in Pyongyang. And in the most difficult period of time, where the electricity supply is interrupted, railroad is electricized in North Korea. Interrupted very oftenly. It was a record. One time they moved during 4 days from Chongjin to Pyongyang by train, 800 kilometers. Situation was very difficult. It remained difficult now, but it's improving a little bit. And but you know, we have now under the development, not only discussion, but development, a few very large-scale economic projects, very promising economic projects. One of them is the conjunction of the railroads of North-South Korea with Russian Trans-Siberian Railroad and conjunction from Busan to West Europe by railroad. Railroad, and there are two main, it's more, but two main links. It's so-called East Road and West Road. East Road, it's along Japanese Sea shore to directly to Russia border, to Tumangan Hasan. And the second one to China, and through China to Russia, maybe then to through Kazakhstan to Russia. It's another way. And now North Korea and Russia, of course, also strongly supported, first of all, no, both of them, but first of all, the east, so-called east road to Russia. No, it's only one border. It's cheaper. It's distance, of course, a little bit more, but maybe not a little bit, substantially more, but one border only, it's make the process more easy. And Russia railroad ministry is very active in this process, and Russian railroad specialists prepared feasibility study of this project in North Korea, of course, part of in North Korea, and hundreds of Russian railroad specialists visited North Korea during last years and spent a prolonged period of time, a few months every time, and they investigated and researched every meters of railroad of North Korea from Russia border to DMZ area, and they prepared feasibility. Of course, it's a very, very poor situation. That it should be constructed new railroad, not restructed the old one, but constructed new railroad. But it's possible. It's possible, and of course, it's very, very promising project, because it's. Of course, it depends on the which point of West Europe is taken into consideration, but in some cases, it reduced time of delivering of the commodities from Busan to West Europe in two times. It can take only 2 weeks and make it two times more cheaper. And in course, it's a good example which shows how North Korea can change, can reconsider their previous position. Of course, it's very difficult to deal, to have deals with them, but possible. And I told you just now, Mr. Donald Greco, the story that Russia embassy ambassador tried to teach young diplomats in our embassy, where they told it's impossible. It's impossible to deal with North Korea. It's so tough partners, so stupid, so on. And he told patience, and once again patience, and it's possible. And Mr. Cartman, I was in Hawaii now, yes, and it was held some conference. He also told in the dinner, and he also mentioned this term, patience. If you have patience, it's possible. In Kido, yes, area, he also, I'm sure, had a lot of troubles and difficult stories with North Korea and a lot of experience. But he also told, if you have patience, it's possible. And the principal position of North Korea was in international cooperation to contact on the bilateral basis. They are afraid of the multilateral format because they have idea they're afraid that they can make the joint front of pressure. That's why they prefer to deal on the bilateral basis. And in railroad project cooperation also, they, during a long period of time, they insisted that, yes, our relation with Russia railroad ministry, it's Russian-North Korean relations. Our relation with South Korea is South Korean-North Korean relationship. But in some moment, it was quite understandable that it's impossible to continue to have a deal on the bilateral basis. There is necessity to combine efforts and to provide some three-party cooperation. They were opposed during a long period of time, but finally they agreed with the argument of Russian side, and at least two ministerial level trilateral meetings were held in Russia dealing with railroad project last year and the year before last year. It's one of the examples they can change their position in some principle from their point of view questions. And cooperation developed strongly, and one of the reasons is that leadership of our both countries really succeeded to establish the very efficient link of communication. Two people from Russia side, our present ambassador, Mr. Karlov, and the Russia president preliminary representative in Far East Federal Region, Mr. Pulikovsky, accompanied Kim Jong-il during his first visit to Russia, 24 days by train. Full time they were together with him into train. And of course they have a lot of time for conversation, for discussions, and they became his friends. Of course the friend number one for Kim Jong-il is Mr. Putin, but another two guys, it's Mr. Pulikovsky and Mr. Karlov, ambassador. And our relations are very close and informal. It's unbelievable. The Russian ambassador has opportunity to meet Kim Jong-il every month. Sometimes it's short protocol meetings to deliver some message, but sometimes it's informal discussion, very prolonged, till morning, to discuss different points, different questions in the world politics, and very different one. And Kim Jong-il became a frequent guest in Russia embassy. It's unbelievable. Yes, he visited a few times, and some remarkable and in Korean, North Korean way, some unusual way, some signs of respect and goodwill. When I was, it was the beginning of such kind of jest. For example, one day, unexpectedly, two big trails came into the Russian embassy with a live fish, and it was a gift to the Russia embassy employees. Nobody knew what to do with the fish. It was divided between the all people in embassy, together with child. It's about a little bit more than 100 of people, and every people received 11 fishes alive. At one, or watermelon, it was some gift. Three big, 22 kilograms, everyone, watermelons to Russian embassy employees. Or something else. Or they organized a nice hunting, we had the opportunity to have hunting. It's very good in North Korea, there are possibilities, but it was ordinary, real huntings. But it was some kind of super hunting to elks and so on and so on. Or he invited Russian employees, all diplomats with family, to have a rest for a weekend in his residence, one of his residents in the East Coast, and so on and so on and so on. Very unusual signs of respect. And six-party talks. Yeah, how many time I have? 10 more minutes. Time is going very quickly, I'm sorry. Six-party talks. When well-known visit of Mr. Kelly in October 2002 year happened to place and the other events, and when North Korea withdrew from NPT, by the way, it's interesting, 10 days before they announced their decision to withdraw to NPT, I had some conversation with Council of DPRK Embassy in Moscow, and I explained to him, if you will do it, you will meet the very, very painful and bad consequences. I enumerated the first, second, third, and so on, so on, so on. He listened to me, and finally he told, yeah, I absolutely agree, you are right, I agree with you. And NPT is good treaty, we respect the treaty, but the one reason is, if the United States will decide to attack us, NPT treaty will not protect us. And UN will not protect us, indispensable. We are in compliance with NPT or we are not in compliance. Only we by themselves can protect us, and that may be the core philosophy of the approach. And when the situation developed drastically and negatively, As you remember, in January of 2003, the Russia Deputy Foreign Minister, Mr. Losikov, now he is ambassador to Japan, he paid a special visit as a special representative of President Putin to North Korea, and for the first time proposed a package formula, yes? And that time North Korea rejected, and they told that we need the direct and bilateral contact with the United States because it's our bilateral problem, and only on the basis with the United States bilaterally we can find solution of this problem, and we have no necessity to ask some third country, even if it's Russia, our friend, but we have no necessity for the intermediate efforts. But lately they accepted, and as I can understand, another part also elaborated their own package formula, which included many points which was previously proposed by Russia. But Russia, of course, as you know, the basic goal on the Korean Peninsula is provision of stability and peace. It's primary targets. Of course, preventing Korean Peninsula from nuclear armament and providing the non-nuclear status of Korean Peninsula and North Korea also. But peace and stability in our borders, we have joint border, yes, we know, understand, and we know very well what, how it will be affected, our security interest, if military conflict will take place on Korean Peninsula. And Russia approach was and is, of course we proposed multilateral talk also, but if bilateral talk between North Korea and the United States can be more efficient and more successful, Russia is ready to support it and to invite it. Because the most important thing was and is to stop negative development of situation. And I think Russia position, and not only Russia position, and many other countries, they, of course, participation in six-party talks, it's important for Russia, and Russia is ready to use their capability to contribute and for peaceful solution of the North Korean nuclear problem. But the, one of the most important tasks dimension of six-party talk was use this format like some kind of umbrella cover for the providing North Korean-United States dialogue in framework of six-party talks to provide the opportunity for them to meet themselves and to exchange their views and so on and so on and so on and so on. And of course, Russia supports the six-party process strongly, but not consider it that only one. And it will invite and greet any other form which can give positive results. And the present latest developments were very, very not happy. Of course, I mean the February and the statement in February that they stop their participation in six-party talk and that they have nuclear weapons, officially assessment, officially statement dealing with. Of course, Russia took it negatively, but at the same time, we consider that only dialogue and dialogue which include and respect interest of all sides is the only way for the find of positive solution of the this situation and this problem. But of course now situation became once again more complicated than it was before a few months ago. Yes? Maybe questions?
My name is Cambria, I'm retired. What would you
for?
Since the end of the Korean War, which would open up a broader umbrella for resolving problems on a divided Korean peninsula. At this time, you can have U.S. RK talks. You could have China, the U.S., Seoul, and Pyongyang talking.
And you can also have six parts where Russia and Japan come in. So therefore, you have a floating, you have a tiered layer of countries dealing with issues that are over a half a century old, and which can also, which has to include, which have to include the nuclear issue.
Thank you. Of course, the Geneva Conference of 54 became a very important event in the history, in the diplomacy history, and of course it's a very remarkable event, of course. As I told, Russia is ready to support and participate in any kind of the contact, any format which can be successful, useful, positive for the resolving of this question. But frankly speaking, my personal point of view, some North Korean arguments, from my point of view, looks like quite grounded. What they talk about? They talked, of course, six-party talks is very good, yes, but what does it mean guarantee of six-country? What does it mean guarantee from side of Russia, China, Japan, South Korea? Is it real guarantee of security for North Korea? No. Because the primary player in this situation is the United States. And just as I repeat their point of view, yes, North Korean point of view, the crisis, nuclear crisis, it's first of all crisis in bilateral relationship between the United States and North Korea. It's a crisis of the agreed framework, which was signed by two parts, yes? And these two parts in position to find or not to find solution of this problem. And the threat is posed from their point of view to the security of DPRK from the side of the United States. And only the United States are in position to remove these threats. Not Russia, not Japan, not Russia, Japan, China can give any kind of guarantee, but it will mean nothing if the United States will not agree with it, yes? And it's one of the reasons why they are so consistent in seeking the bilateral contact with the United States. And maybe it's, I think it's one of the way, and maybe in some prospect it can realize itself. Multi-participants, in some situation, it can complicate the search for solutions. Technically, bilateral negotiations are sometimes more efficient. Thank you. Yeah.
Dr. Voronsov, I'm Richard Rades from Russell & Company. What do the North Koreans mean more specifically when they say, if the United States decides to attack, or only the United States is in the position to remove the threats to North Korea? Do they mean our troops in South Korea? Do they mean Polaris submarines offshore that would launch a nuclear attack? Do they mean B-52s flying in? I mean, what sort of threat do they want to see us remove?
No, as you know, during the summit between North and South, according to the Mr. Kim Dae-jung, Kim Jong-il accepted the American presence in South Korea. It's not the, of course, on the rhetoric level, it's a big headache and big obstacle for North Korea, but on the level of practical policy, pragmatic policy, and North Koreans are pragmatic people, I mean leadership, they can accept and tolerate American presence in South Korea during a long period of time in framework of the normalization of bilateral relations with the United States. I think when they speak, they consider the military threat, they, first of all, they have in mind the inclusion of North Korea and the excess of evil, inclusion them now and the outpost of tyranny, inclusion there in list for the preventive, the target of opportunity in the preemptive nuclear attack doctrine, and so on and so on. They have in mind some repetition, some Iraq invasion scenario. What they have in mind when they speak about? And of course, they regards, I think very, not think, I'm sure that very painfully, the adoption of the North Korea Human Rights Act last year, because they are speaking that you should follow English proverb, yes, to look not the government says, but what government deal. And on the rhetoric level, the Republic administration repeats that they have no plan to invade North Korea, but on practical level, human act, what is it? It's attempt to facilitate refugees flow. It's real policy to provide the regime change in North Korea, yes. And no, they told about openly in their statement and memorandum, especially in memorandum in March 9 this year, that the real policy of the United States administration shows the real intention to provide the regime change in North Korea.
Dr. Vorontsov, there was a development reported today in the New York Times. Selig Harrison met with Kim Jong-nam and Kang Suk-ju and Ri Chan-bok and Kim Gae-gwan, and the North Koreans have apparently sort of stiffened their conditions for resuming any kind of negotiation, saying that the United States has to give more categoric assurances of friendship and non-hostile intent. We often ask about how much influence China has on North Korea. I watched President Putin and President Bush's recent encounter. I wonder, how much influence do you think President Putin has on President Bush? Do you think,
President Bush?
Yes. How willing do you think President Putin would be to speak very directly and very honestly on the need for the United States to become more substantively involved in the six-party process?
Thank you. No, first of all, you mentioned Mr. Selig Harrison. I would like, first of all, to express my deeply appreciation with your joint report with Mr. Selig Harrison, which you prepared 2 times dealing with Korean problem, highly professional, highly intellectual, and a very deep analysis of the people who know North Korean and Korean situation and North Korean situation, particularly in details. I enjoyed very much to read both of this report last year and this year. Unfortunately, it's not still, I think, still administration not following the recommendation. But
to say the least.
Yeah, try. I don't know. I'm not in position, of course, to predict in which way Mr. Putin will talk, will have a talk with Mr. Bush dealing Korean problem. But I think that the fact that during last years, recently, in spite of the fact that it quite obviously the Republican administration target, one of the target was to unite alliance, friends, partners in some kind of coalition against North Korea, yes, and to enhance pressure over North Korea. And in spite of the fact that, of course, undoubtedly, the position of the Washington is very attentively is taken into consideration in all countries, in Russia also. And in spite of the fact Russia continue to provide some kind of independent policy toward Moscow there and try to continue to save the positive trend and the positive cooperation with North Korea, it's a manifested and shows the will and readiness of Mr. Putin to give some sign, yes? To give some example and to show in practice that engagement policy is a workable policy, that it's gave possible result, positive result. And we, what now we have no time, but we know very well that the economic reform is under process in North Korea. Still July 2002, yes? In spite of the confrontation with the United States, which, of course, complicated strongly the process of economic reform, they continue. They began, it's most important. They began, beginning as the most important and most difficult, as we know, and continue some economic, important economic changes, marketer, of course, in the very far prospect, but it's market-oriented changes in the economy. And we should try to save this process because it's promised the peaceful changes, positive changes inside North Korea and preventing North Korea. And we know it by our own experience in Soviet Union and other socialist, former socialist countries, that this kind of process is the beginning of very drastic changes. If it will be developing, it will be facilitated. But united front for pressure, sanctions, isolations, of course will stop this process of domestic change inside of North Korea. Of course will exaggerate and make their position in domestic policy and foreign policy more tougher, more uncompromised. It's not the best way. I think maybe, I might guess, yes, maybe Mr. Putin will try to explain this alternative and this another options possibility to Mr. Bush, maybe.
Thank you. Yes, John?
Explain a little more about what was the package deal that Russia proposed on regarding the nuclear resolution of a nuclear issue, and the if North Korea does not return to the six-party talks by June, I heard that there's some rumor that U.S. may take the case to Security Council. In that case, what will be the your country's position on sanction? Huh? Thank you.
Another easy question.
Russia package proposal contains basically all elements that were showed later, yes? First of all, it's a simultaneous approach, yes? That both sides should make steps towards resolving this question simultaneously. What, for example, freezing and economic assistance, yes? And the core of Russia proposal was that the, first of all, two sides, North Korea and the United States, should meet themselves in the negotiation table. But because you remember it was in January of 2003, yes. But because the framework agreement or agreed framework, yes. Happened to be not so successful finally, in spite of the fact it was good document, yeah? And Russia proposed that maybe it will be useful that decision to which both sides will come will enhanced and added by some kind of cross guarantee from in other countries, China, Russia, Japan, South Korea, which could which will take responsibility to look for how this conclusion will be implemented, yes, for which will monitor, yeah, to make monitoring take responsibility to provide monitoring how this agreement would implement some kind of additional participation of outside party involved, yes. But the core of agreement, of course, was looked as an agreement between the two sides, primary sides, between the United States and North Korea. And about the prospect, no, first of all, I would like it not very, once again, it's my humble and personal point of view, it's not very wise to restrict and to make the exact date when they should come back to six-party talk, June, July, or something else. The Russia position is, I think as Chinese also, that the most efficient way, because we have the long experience of cooperation with North Korea, yes? It's hard experience, but important, yes? The most effective way is silence, quiet diplomacy. Because the problem of face, saving face, is very important, and for North Korea also. And by the way, some Japanese guy, excuse me, Chinese guy, Korean specialist, in the private level, they used to speak, China to join international sanctions, especially headed by the United States against North Korea. It means to kill our bilateral relations forever. Never, never. Yes, we have big headache with North Korea. Yes, we worried about many their steps. Yes, maybe we will need to make some kind of sanctions against North Korea, but we will deal it only unilaterally, only in quiet diplomacy, without announcements. I can understand very good their position. And sanctions, what does it mean, sanctions? Isolation, what does it mean? What will be the result? The North Korea lived under the isolation during a long period of time and survived. Expectation, which we can read in some papers and some statements close to the present administration, that the situation is shakeable, that they can be overcome in case of the isolations, I don't believe in it. We remember that in the very recently, only 10 years ago, majority of specialists were absolutely sure that after death of Kim Il-sung, the regime is doomed. They gave 6 months, maximum 2 years. And situation was really very difficult for North Korea, very, really very difficult, but they survived. Now their situation is not so bad. And we know they are unbelievable capability for survival. One example, if you have time. I was in the North Korean embassy now. I was for the first time when I was a student at Kim Il-sung University. It was 79-80. But the second time, a long period of time, I mean, it's 2000-2001. And the winter 2000-2001 was extremely cold, extremely cold. It, as a Korean, North Korean specialist, I had some conversation in the Ministry of Meteorology. They told it was the second year after the 51 Korean War. Extremely cold. The medium temperature in Pyongyang during June, January, during all months, was 25 degree minus Celsius, 25 degree minus. And a lot of snowing. And it was the beginning when I have come and compared situation with 79-18. Of course, it was much more better, much, much more worse situation, was economic situation. Lack of electricity. And they constructed, yes, the Pyongyang. It's quite modern city, yes? Multi-floor concrete buildings, but no electricity, no water, because no electricity, no hot water, pipe destroyed. People are going to the 20th floor by walk, taking water, yes? And have to live in concrete building when there is no electricity. They were strongly restricted every family had a right to have only two electricity supplier, electric heater for family. Have to live in such condition. Some people try to change their prestigious flat and prestigious multi-floor buildings to peasant-type building because it's much more easy to find the possibility to produce heater in this condition. I was told that people, yes, they created some kind of tent from vinyl materials inside of the flat, tent, some heater, and all family inside, and make it warmer by breathing, and so on and so on, and they survived. And no compliance. Everything is okay. Yeah, it's unbelievable from our point of view, from our ordinary point of view, how to possible to survive in such condition. They can survive. And the Stalinist, socialist type of economy, as you know, it's provide more opportunity for surviving in the extreme situation, for mobilization of resources and distribution of, for the most important from the point of view of government, targets of resources. I'm not sure that they will collapse economically in case of isolation, but we speak about a lot about impracticability, that their behavior is unpredictable, dangerous. But about the threat that they can deliver the fissile materials and nuclear weapon to the another country, to bad guy and so on and so on, international terrorist and so on and so on. We criticize them strongly, the participation in narco-traffic, smuggling, so on. But in case, if we will provide isolation, if we will exclude for them their legal link of communications, economic operations, what they should do, how for survival, to provide survival, if they can legally participate in economic exchange, they will be participate illegally. And we will push them by our own ways along the direction of unpredictable and very dangerous behavior indeed. It's contradiction to our goals. Yes.
As you describe those terrible conditions, who did they blame for the cold and the lack of electricity?
Good question. Once again, it's interesting. They blame everybody except themselves. The United States is guilty, it's understandable why, yes? Russia is also guilty because its former Soviet Union is betrayed. And they violated the... Partially it's correct, but many economic agreements were violated by the Russia, yes, in the beginning of 19. But it's understandable also. China also is guilty because very rich country, but their economic assistance is not so much. They can give more, but they don't want to give more. And so on and so on. Everybody guilty, but not them. Not them. Themselves.
Fascinating. Yes.
Mr. Speaker, I think you have ethnically Korean-speaking, Korean minority in Russia. Yes. So many. So as a... And you worked in Pyongyang as a diplomat, and also you studied in Kim Il-sung University. Okay. How many you just estimate the Korean-speaking Korean minority in Russia at present?
It's a good question, because the Korean minority and Korean-speaking is not the same, yeah? Unfortunately, because... According to statistics, in the former Soviet Union, was about 500 Korean nationality people. But not a minority among them could speak Korean. The majority forgot Korean language. And it was about 2,100 in Uzbekistan, 200,000 people in Uzbekistan, 2,100 people in Kazakhstan, all together, and you know, they were removed from the Russian maritime province in 37 years to Kazakhstan, then they removed to Uzbekistan and the Central Asia Republic, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, a little bit. In Russia, Federation was about 100 and remain about 100.
You mean 1 million?
No, not 1 million. 100,000?
100,000
in Russia. Altogether, it was 500,000. In the Soviet Union, it was 500,000.
Okay.
500,000. But majority were in Central Asian republics. But now, recently, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, but of course unfortunately for the Koreans who lived in Central Asia, in result of the ethnic problem, ethnic pressure, ethnic, in some cases, real clean assurance, like in Tajikistan, many of them tried to move to Russia because it's more safety, and more developed country and more democratic country and so on and so on. And for example, in Tajikistan or in Chechnya, for example, they were a Korean minority. They left this region totally. They're running because it was impossible to leave. In Kazakhstan, situation is not so bad. Kazakhstan governor's national policy is quite relatively tolerant. But in Uzbekistan, for example, situation difficult. For not only Korean, for all not Uzbek people, in Russian also. Russia also live in these areas. And in result of these questions and reasons, a substantial part, I cannot to describe exact figure, but substantial part of Koreans are removing into Russia. And many of them, or maybe some substantial part of them, are moving to the maritime province. But we have many Korean native organizations, yes, big scale, on the federal level. And one of them is All Russia Union of Koreans, headed by the Vasily Tso, who was former member of parliament of Russia, very educated and experienced people. And he organized, by the way, this organization organized and provided last year a big festival. During the whole year, we celebrated 140 years of beginning of Korean coming into Russia from Korea, 140 years. It was big event last year. Many different type of event were organized, conferences, celebrations in many cities, not only in Moscow and not only in Vladivostok, for example. We have a pro-South Korean organization, big organization. It's a federation of cultural autonomy. And pro-North Korean organizations. It's United, Tchonil, Unity. Yes. Massive organization, all of them, quite massive organization, multi people have participated. And now they began to teach Korean language, to Korean tradition, Korean cuisine, and so on and so on and so on.
Good. Could I ask, could you compare briefly your relations with Japan and your relations with China?
Japan and China? Both countries, of course, very important for Russia. From many point of view, but of course, geographically, we have much more higher level of cooperation with China, and we have the Treaty of Cooperation, yes, and mutual understanding, and we closed our border dispute last year finally, when during the visit of Mr. Putin to China. But in case of economic cooperation, of course, the bulk of turnover with China much more bigger than with Japan, but Japan also very important economical country. And as you know, we have some problems, painful problem with China in case of reorientation of the oil pipeline, which was previously planned to go to be constructed to China, but now we decided recently, after the Japan interfered actively and promised more economic assistance and more investments, we oriented it to Nakhodka Harbor, and we had problem with China. But the reason is It's not only because for Japan, but it's for harbor. We are free in supply, yes? We have the bad experience with Turkish when we constructed the gas pipeline to Turkish. And after the completed of the work, the Turkish reduced price of the gas. And Russia had nothing to do because gas pipeline is constructed only to one country. And the Turkish were monopolist. We were afraid that now China could become the monopolist of Russian oil and be in position to dictate the prices. So that's why we decided to construct a harbor and to have a free hands. But it's very large scale and promising cooperation with Japan, pipeline and Sakhalin project, where Japan is with also together with the United States is very, very active. Oil and gas sites development. But on the political level, we have good relations with both countries, but with Beijing is, of course, much more high level of cooperation. I don't speak about the military cooperation and the arms sales to China. It's one of our biggest market of our armament and so on and so on.
It's China.
Yes, of course, China.
How about the Northern Islands?
Oh, how many times we have? You know, the recent position of Russia is that we approved the legitimacy of the declaration of 56 year between the Soviet Union and China. The declaration was adopted by the parliament of both countries. Yes, it became the international document. According to this declaration, Russia agreed to not to return, but to give, to deliver to Japan two islands. In case if the peace treaty will conclude it. It was 56 years. Then situation changed. Japan changed position. They adopted a new treaty with the United States. And Russia, Soviet Union, also changed the position and told that we don't recognize this declaration, that we have no terrain problem with Japan, and this monolith position was during also a period of time. But then, under late Gorbachev and Yeltsin, situation became to discuss in another way. But our last position is we accept the declaration of 56 years because it's obligatory by the document. It was adopted by the parliament of Soviet Union also. But it's only two islands, the small islands, Shikatan and Habamai. Japan is not satisfied. They demand at least four islands. And their position is adamant. And recently, weeks ago, the parliament of Japan adopted a resolution with demand not the four, they expanded their demand and returned to their old position when they demanded all Kuril Islands. Of course, it's not facilitate and not help the successful negotiations dealing with this problem. And many, many aspects of this situation, unfortunately, time is short. But I will be pleased to discuss. I was involved in discussion and I participated in the hearings in the Russian Duma, the Russian Parliament dealing with Northern Terrain in 2003. By the way, the position of Parliament was hard in Russian Parliament. Almost unanimously, they rejected the even 56-year declaration. They told that it contradicts the national interest of Russia.
All right, our last question.
Dr. Vorontsov, continuing on with China. I went to a talk last week where an investment advisor was speaking about having driven up through the part of Siberia that 100 years ago actually was part of China. And I'd forgotten which war or how that part of China went to Russia. But he said that there were Chinese living and working and doing things up in there all over the place. And it wasn't just people moving following economic opportunities. But he thought that in due course, that part of Siberia was going to go back to China one way or the other. And I was wondering, is this something that's on the radar screen of the Russian leadership? If it is, what are they going to do about it? Why do you keep selling advanced weapons to China, which could be used against you at some point in time?
Good question, of course. It's interesting. When I was a student, at a period of the deterioration of relation between Soviet and China, as you know, we have military relations, the border, and so on and so on. And one of our, it's not anecdote, it's a real story. One of the famous archaeology in Siberia area, he found new evidence that and published it. That the people who lived a few thousand years ago were the Mongol type people. And China in that time used this strongly. Even the rightful and honest Russian scholar, Soviet scholar, accepted that the first people were Chinese in Siberia. And this scholar was invited, he was leader of the Novosibirsk Institute of Archaeology. He was invited in Moscow to Central Committee, and his colleagues were anxious about his fate and so on and so on. And when he came back, they asked, what was the result of your discussion? What the Kremlin told to you? And he answered, the Kremlin told, dwell deeper. Continue your job and more lower level, try to penetrate to more level of the archaeology sites to find new evidence. But if to speak seriously, yes, I think it was one of the reasons why Russia now try to and facilitate and make some concession, important concession, to close this terrain problem finally. And by the way, good example. These negotiations continue 25 years, border negotiations between Soviet Union and Russia and China. They suspended and resumed, the beginning, and the long period of time was very unsuccessful. But finally, we succeeded to conclude this very important agreement. It's some examples that patience is some important, not only with North Koreans, and it can give good result. But juridically, we closed this problem, and we defined our border finally, and on the official level, and China accepted it. Another thing that informally, in some publications and some discussions, informal discussions and educations inside of China, there are some forces in China who continue to claim that yes, big part of Siberia was part of the China. But practically, China had no experience of the permanent living on the terrain north from Amur River. Their legitimacy was very, very declarative, because there was no people. There were some tribals, very real tribals, and they declare it's our terrain. But no peasants, no agricultural activity, no another kind of activity. China never conducted in the terrain to north part from Amur River. That's why it's another situation, for example, like with Japan, because Japan, they developed economically northern islands. It's fact, yes, real fact. But China never has a permanent population on the northern bank of Amur River. It was included in Russia not in the cause of war. It was, of course, not equal agreement, but it was peaceful agreement in 860 years that the border was defined by Amur River. But yes, your question, why Russia continue to sell armament to China, which can be used against Russia, yes, it's a real question. But, you know, the situation in Russia is difficult, and the arms sales became maybe only way for Russia to save in military industry, because Russia army is not the position to buy anything. Russia army used obsolete armament, which remained from the Soviet Union, but to save it, to continue to support the, it's the most sophisticated factories and the people who are engaged in these factories, engineers, scholars, workers, the most qualified, and to support them, we need to buy armament to many countries, and China is one of the, India, Southeast Asia, and some other regions. It's our country who like our weapons.
Thank you very much, Dr. May I say, just a striking illustration to me of how much more we need to be in touch with our Russian friends. I really learned so much from you. The fact that you had begun to extend support to Shah Massoud in Afghanistan before he was killed. God almighty, if he'd only survived. And some of the anecdotes that you tell in terms of your dealing with the North Koreans remind me so much of what I hear from the Chinese. They're not easy to deal with. But it was just very, very flavorful. I very much appreciate your coming, and I hope you'll stick around and talk to people who want to talk more. Thank you all for coming.
The opinions expressed in this forum do not necessarily reflect those of the Korea Society.
The proceeding was a production of the Korea Society. For more information on our programs, please visit www.koreasociety.org.